chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're gonna make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, rope bags, stocks, and giants. Now, tonight, we've just spent Weber on the board. The S&P futures up a buck and a half. Dow futures up 4. NASDAQ futures up 14, which is not so much unless you saw that they were down 16 last night on the S&Ps. We bounced back pretty quickly from that as people were buying the dip, as they say. Frank, how are you?
Good, Thomas.
Did you watch any of the Oscars?
None.
They were kind of funny. The it's kind of interesting to watch because this guy who was I think they won cinematography, they won best director, and I think they won best picture. They won another one, this Parasite.
Best movie.
Yeah. They won best movie, best director. I think it was cinematography, and it was one more. But the Korean dude comes up, and he was funny as hell. He comes up, and he speaks mostly Korean, so he brings the lady up to his translating. After the first one, he goes, I think I'm going to be drinking tonight. Well, he was up there 3 more times. He didn't expect any of that. And then finally, after the second one, he goes, I guess it's going to be a long night, finally. But he was, when he came up for the best picture, or best whatever it was, most best director, he was up against, like, Martin Scorsese and those guys. And he gives a quote from a director way long ago. He said it's always driven him, and he goes, that quote was from Martin Scorsese. He goes, I never thought I'd be nominated with him, and I sure never thought I would if I ever was. which is pretty interesting. He's decent. Seems like a decent enough dude. But then,
by the way, it looks like Parasite won for best film, best picture.
Yep.
It also won for best foreign language film, best screenplay, and best director.
So which is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
All right, you guys are supposed to be so smart. What is the difference between screenplay and cinematography? And what is the difference?
Cinematography is the way it's shot.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between screenplay and cinematography.
And screenplay's words, the other's pictures.
Yeah.
Okay, and what's the difference between sound editing and sound, what's the other one? Sound something something. There's two sound ones right after another. One's sound editing, and they're totally different things. One was sound editing, and one was, what's the other one? Can you see the sound ones, Manny? Sound mixing, or one is sound mixing and one is sound editing or something. What could possibly be the difference? How could it be different guys doing it for the same?
One is the sounds and the other is where you put the sounds.
All right, so they're different people in every movie? Evidently. Manny Weber's supposed to know all this stuff. Matt, are you there? Are you back in your spot?
I'm here. I knew definitely about the difference between screenplay and cinematography. You'd have to ask me a real question. You can't say something something and expect us to know.
Oh, I thought you were here. What's the difference between sound editing and sound, are just two sound ones?
Well, I would need to know the second sound one to answer your question, probably.
Why don't you look at the awards there, since you got them right in front of you. One, I think Frank's right. One is you're getting the sounds, and the other one is somehow editing them into the thing. What was the... Remember the movie about the guy who got the...
One sound mixing, one is sound editing.
Right. And I, remember the movie about the guy who, was out looking for new sounds, and he saw this car accident, and then he was able to prove that a bullet hit the tire right before the tire blew out. Because the two sounds, he could separate them. It was kind of, a takeoff on Chappaquiddick. Because the guy had a girl in the car and a whole bit. Anyway, evidently those guys are... Because he was just out getting sounds on, like... Evidently those guys, that's their whole life. They, ladies too. That they'll go out at night and, like, get sounds in the woods of frogs and owls and everything just in case they ever need them.
Well, if you go to the music side, you have your recording engineers that just record the sound. And then you have the mixers that... mess with the sounds and, you know, let's bring up the bass, take down the treble, bring out the vocals.
They mix and master, yeah, everything that's been recorded. So it can be, sometimes it's the same person, but it can be two different people that do that.
Who's the,
and the mixing and mastering that you do, you might do for a month after the recording's done and the band's not even in the room.
Well, they had two people come out to give awards, because there's no, host or hostess anymore. They just go from person to person. But they had Will, who's the comedian, the tall guy, Will,
Ferrell.
Will Ferrell was out with this, and I recognized later, I don't remember her name. They come out, they started talking about the film editing. And they're talking about, first they said the cinematographer was the guy that knocked on your door and told you your scene was coming and drove you over in a golf cart. Obviously he does a little bit more than that.
Will Ferrell was with Julia Louis-Dreyfus last night.
She was funny as hell.
Oh, she's great.
And so she goes, all I know is these film editor guys, they cut me out of the movie. She goes, you know, I was in 1917 until they cut me out. But then the British lady who basically said she won last year and her husband took that as an opportunity to impregnate her, basically. she was funny as hell. She goes, it was one of my husband's favorite nights. I had a good time, too. The only problem is, like, now I got three kids. But anywho, there wasn't a whole lot of, only a couple of people started getting into the politics thing, but not too many.
I heard that part.
The guy won the best actor.
Meaning I heard it on the radio this morning.
The best actor guy?
I only have 45 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but then he took longer. But, the thing that is, you, no matter what, if you watch these things, no matter what your political thing is, I think it is so hard. Well, Frank, you know more because your wife was in this business. It is so hard to make a movie. You appreciate that. That's like the normal American thinking anybody can play quarterback in the NFL or something. Making a movie has got to be one of the most difficult things there is to do from start to finish. I mean, making a real serious movie. I mean, like something like 1917 or Parasite or something. I can't even imagine the amount of hours people put in one of those things. I mean,
start with 18-hour days to begin with.
Yeah, and just the sets and all the other stuff. I mean, just, and like you say, all these different people that are involved and you don't know what the hell they do. And then at the end of the day, the thing could be lousy or it can be good. It's just, all right, I guess we got to talk about, speaking of Parasites, what is going on? The last week, all we did was talk about how the market was so concerned about the coronavirus, yet, in fact, the market was up all week except for Friday. So, can't be all that concerned. It must be concerned about the more amount of money that people are pouring into the system. But, you know what, Frank? I sent you guys it's about my third or fourth article now I'm finding about how this inflation's coming up, and everybody's expecting a big number in the CPI this week. And if we ever get to like 6% in their CPI, we're screwed in terms of inflation. Because it'll really...
You do the shopping. I do the shopping in my family. I've noticed, and I get the same stuff again and again and again. And, I mean, cold cuts, eggs. I mean, anything I get at Costco. You know, frozen chicken wings went from 16 to 20. And, I mean, it's on and on and on.
Well, if you are going, you know, it's an odd world out there shopping, Frank, because I don't, you know, I live alone, but I cook for all the Audrey's friends all the time, so, but you know, it's the oddest thing. It's Super Bowl week, you can't touch a chicken wing, get a chicken breast for $1.49 everywhere, boneless, skinless. You know, I mean, it's, if you go to even the Peoria Market, the most expensive things on the menu are the wings. People decide right. They like wings. Yet you get drumsticks for 49 cents a pound anywhere.
Yeah, but for example, ham has gone from, let's say, you could always find $4.99 a pound. And for good ham, it might even be, you know, Boar's Head or Kretschmar, you know, a decent smoked ham. And now everything's $7.99 to $9.99 a pound.
Anything that anybody
touches.
That's
in the past 6 months.
Anything that anybody touches continues to go up. If it's sliced for you or anything like that. Other stuff, if you just, you know, like I'm saying, there's massive difference between the sale items and the other stuff. If you decide you want to have something for dinner and you went out and get it versus the thing next to it that's for sale, you could sure tell how there's too much of something. For a while it was pork. There wasn't a place on earth you couldn't get pork tenderloin. The boneless pork thing for, you know, $1.60 or whatever. I mean, I'm with you. But Frank, I think the inflation is different this time. It's coming from the leases and the taxes, the huge inflation. I mean, you're right about, and the reason why I say that is if you go into the 7-Eleven or even the store like you're talking about eggs, even Meijer, sometimes the eggs are, you know, $2 or more than that for 12 of them. Yet I go to Restaurant Depot and I can get 15 dozen jumbos for $15. Or 12 dozen. I mean, they're $1.20 a dozen. They haven't gone up in the years I've been going there. So the more taxes and the more owners you have in the mix, it just drives the price dramatically up.
Well, it's like going to a restaurant where they own the building versus a restaurant where they're leasing.
Wouldn't you like to
own... The difference in price is astounding.
Wouldn't you like to go to the own a restaurant now where you own the place for like 40 years and you could price yourself like these other people? Well, you probably wouldn't. You'd stay under it, but still, you're making out like a bandit.
I mean, no, I actually go to a few places like that.
Well, I imagine you do, but I mean...
But just because I've been around that long and, you know, if you don't change your behavior in 40 years, you're going to one of those places.
Except you change your location. You don't live in Western Tucky anymore.
No. I live in Southern Tucky.
Yeah, Southern Tucky. All right, so what's the market going to do? What is your read? We were talking about it back and forth on the... We're talking about a lot of stuff this week. I was surrounded by right-wingers all weekend, and I'm just recovering.
the biggest thing happening there is all of a sudden we aren't the snowflakes. They're the snowflakes. They're so sensitive.
Oh, I know.
Thin skin has become contagious.
I know. I listen. One of Audrey's right-wing girlfriends, somehow, maybe because I dozed off or something, got control of the TV during a hockey game, and she puts on this thing from, I don't know, Audrey's got this Fire Stick thing now. What a pain in the ass that thing is. It takes anybody for an hour to find something, and while they're clicking through it, I'm like bored stiff. But that's one thing. But they put this thing out about Man in a Castle or something. Essentially was about a three-hour documentary on on America if the Nazis would have won.
Oh, it's a series, Tom.
Okay, all right.
And it's about a four-season series right now, season four.
Well, she must have been...
And it's the Nazis and the Japanese
right.
had won.
So the western part of the U.S. is Asian U.S. The eastern part is like Nazi U.S. and the middle is sort of like Vichy France, right?
Kentucky.
Or Kentucky. Well, good point. But anyway, all they're doing is shooting people and torturing people. And I'm going, you know, enough of this. I mean, it's like... So anyway, one of the ladies was over. I was driving her. She had to do some stuff. And so she has no car. So I'm driving her around. And she's as right-wing as right-wing can get out. And we're talking about people that are lying. The president, who never saw the truth if it stuck him in the head. And the funny part is, she goes, what's he lying about? I said, well, say simple stuff. Say the amount of jobs created since he got there. The best ever, most that anybody's ever done. She goes, well, they have. It's up to like 6 million. I said, no, it's not. It's close, but it's not six. And I said, have you ever really looked at the numbers? Well, what do you mean? I said, so you just believe the guy. Well, yeah. Okay, so, and I said, I don't want to use the name, but I said, no, and in the last, just for instance, from the end of 2016, all right, so the man took office in whatever, right then, say January 17. So from the end of 2016 to the end of 2019, and we're looking at the A1 survey, we've picked up 5.5 million jobs. This is the household survey. From the end of 2013 to 17, which is 2014 to 17, which is 15, 16, 17, we picked up 7 million. Actually, it's more like 146,305 to 153,337. So that's essentially 7 million exactly. So,
yep.
So why? I'm not saying that the 5 point something isn't good, and the fact that there's a lot of things that have happened in the 3 years Trump has been president that have been very positive economic wise. There's no debating that. Why does somebody have to say every day that it's more than anybody else has ever done when it's not even more than the 3 years before he got in there? Well, it has to be. The jobs are much better. You don't know that. I don't know that. How do you even begin to say it? Well, there must be something. What do you mean there must be something? There is something. The dude lies. what do you want me to say? I said, do you know, the fact that every single time the guy says something, you gotta check where you're looking. And most of the time.
Well, he has to do that so that people don't all of a sudden realize that it's an inherited economy.
Well, I don't know.
That he didn't do it on his own. You have to minimize Obama.
Oh, right.
Or he does.
But just take credit for the 5.5, which is pretty darn good.
Right.
Why do you have to take it to the next level and constantly, whatever, the guy before you. I'm going to say this, the years before 2017, so if you look at 14, 15, 16, the number's 10. To the end of 2000, that would be 14, 15, 16. So the end of 2013, 143. End of 2016, 151. So it's 8 there. So it's 8, 8, and then 5 point something.
Right.
So, it's... Now, granted, there was a lot more people out of work when Obama took office. So there was a lot more room to go. We know that. We're trying to be honest here. I'm not picking Obama over Trump or anything, because I don't think Obama did a very good job either. But the idea, and if you look at the unemployment from 2014, which we had let's go even further. Let's say 2013, when things still weren't so hot. You had 11 million people unemployed. You had 90 million people in the "we don't know what the hell they're doing" column. Now we've got 5.8 million people in the unemployed column, so we're down close to 6 million, and we're up 5 million in the other column, 4.9. Now, granted, we've had people enter the workforce. We've had, but not that many more. Since 2016, since 2017, the population's only grown by 4 million people, which I don't think is all that. So, yes, the progress is definitely there. But what is this constant one against another type of thing? I don't get. But I'm also not.
Well, things are so good. Why are we cutting this? Does his budget need to cut the safety net?
Because
and in full openness, I do have a sister quadriplegic on full Medicaid. But I mean, they're going after her. What's going on? Things are so good.
What's going on is those people, that group of old white guys, just keep thinking everybody else is jumping on the system and they're all lazy and there's nothing really wrong with them. There's an innate distrust of anybody. Yet if they do well from the government, that's okay. If we give $1 trillion to banks, that's okay. If we give 40 cents to somebody you and I know, then it's moral hazard.
Right, I mean, $1.7 trillion will pay off every student loan.
Right, but we can't look at it that way because that's moral hazard.
Because somebody's getting something for something.
No,
nothing.
Somebody at my level is getting something for something. That's therein lies the difference. And I used to sense this in board meetings at the CBOE, Frank. And it's been it's way past the statute of limitations. But if some firm were to do something untoward, and we would talk about like the amount of illegal crosses on the floor and things like that. Oh, man, that's those guys, even though there's obviously rules against it. Oh, man, if we enforce that, they're going to go to another exchange. You can't do that. That'd be bad for business. But let Matt Weber be, two contracts over position limits who nobody cared one way or the other whether he was or he wasn't. Oh, no, we got to do something about him. We can't let guys break the law. This weekend, last Friday, I was getting a huge amount of stuff from I don't know where exactly in Ancestry.com or someplace does it give you access to like people's extended family. In other words, I'm getting all this stuff.
They have trees. You can have public or private family trees.
Okay, so say for instance, I don't like Matt Weber's politics. He's way too liberal for anybody we know. So I don't like his politics. So I want to say something about him. I can say, how do I get these things that says, oh my God, he's marrying this girl, Jill, who everybody thinks is pretty special. But she's not really, because her cousin in Arizona, who she's never met, is married to a guy whose father was this liberal that gave money to somebody else, whose cousin did something We did something else. And 48 people away from Matty Weber through in-laws or cousins or whatever, people he never even met, it proves he's an ass.
That's called 4channel.
How do people even... Matty, how do they even find this stuff? I mean, I'm such a Luddite when it comes to this. How would anybody know that Jill, like, had a cousin in Arizona who was a bleep?
It's a good question. A lot of time on their hands, that's for sure.
Yeah, I get like two or three
it's
of these.
It's the 400-pound guy in his parents' basement. Same dude.
Well, I mean, I get these like 2-3 days a week. And oh, by the way, Jill's cousin's father's brother, who married some lady who was a daughter of an alderman. There you go. Chicago alderman. There's a connection. And you're sitting there going, I don't even know Jill had a cousin whose father's brother was an alderman, and neither did she. Yep, that's why she's messed up, and that's why you're messed up. So you don't understand this stuff, Manny. You spend way too much time on the road.
Yeah.
But I get one of these a week. So finally, last week, I hit, they were talking about you have to throw all the illegal people out of, like, Chicago. Sanctuary cities, because Trump tweeted out about, was it L.A. and somewhere else, and then I get all these things about, is Chicago next? We're going to come down on Chicago. And I kept thinking of this German thing with the guys, the Gestapo people standing all around the place, this German TV show, and I'm getting the connection here. So of course I say, well, you know, we really need to do this right. We got to show up with vans in the middle of the night, spotlights, the whole bit, make sure the neighbors see. Then I start getting the stuff back about, well, it's a law. If you don't respect the law, laws have to be enforced. I said, okay, I'll bet you bought some crap from Amazon in the last 20 years. That law has to be enforced. Should I send you a bill with, like, triple damages for not paying it on time? Oh, no, wait a minute. That's different. What's different
about it? Or buying the sports jerseys, unlicensed sports jerseys directly from China. Ever do that, Matty?
Yeah, well, I bet Matty does it. I bet Thomas does that and resells them. Just saying. That kind of a guy. All right, Frank, we don't have too much longer here, but what are we going to do with this? How do you trade this? I mean, is it we just keep going as long as the money keeps coming in? I'm thinking that's what you do, to be honest with you. But I think you got to keep keeping those puts in
there. That's the rule right now. Have you seen anything different?
No, but also I'm not going to get the memo when it changes. If I just totally ignore what I think, you know, that we're reaching the end of that game. Of course, every time we do, another country throws money into the place. I think we're getting...
But that's what happens. We've been afraid to ignore it for 4 years.
So we were a little early.
I'm Chauncey Gardner. You know, a modest proposal I like to watch. Being there.
I think we're about to see some stuff on the inflation front. But I also think the economy might pick up a little bit. So I don't know we have to pick up if China keeps pulling down. I mean, where are the exports and stuff going to come out of that place? How bad do you think this is going to get?
I have no idea. I mean, they're shutting down or telling Nigeria and Chile that they don't want any more copper for a while.
Well, that's... I mean, we'll see. We can see copper under 225. That'd be interesting.
And 3 months ago, they were talking about copper over $3.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going that way. Well, Frank, thank you very much, buddy. S&P Futures still down a buck. Dow Futures down 21. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Garth and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. John Flanagan with us. We've done a deep dive into his past, and we're going to reveal that after sports, weather, traffic here. SP futures down 1, NASDAQ futures up 3.25, Dow futures down 15. So, like I said, the SPYs were down 16 at one point last night. Got the DAX down 39.3%, FTSE down 13.2%, CAC around down 21.3%, so moderately lower over there. Nikkei down 142.6%. Shanghai actually up 14.5%, Hang Seng down 162.6%. So mixed bag over there. 1.57 on the U.S. 10-year, that's lower on the rate, higher on the bonds. Bund minus 0.39, and the 10-year in Japan minus 0.05, that's the lowest we've seen in a while. Oil, we've got at down 7 cents, 50.25, so oil is stuck here between 50 and 52. Every time I say that, it moves, but it's been stuck here. Brent down a dime, 54.37. Natural gas down 6 cents, 179. Wow. RBOB, 151. Gold up 210, 15.75. Silver up 6 cents, 17.76. Copper actually holding in there, 255, even though, like I said, Frank said that the Chinese is trying to cut back on some of their deliveries from the places that do copper. Individual stocks, Apple's down $3. Other than that, nothing moving very much here this morning. Matty, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like the Edens is all quiet. Kennedy a bit slow out near O'Hare, but nothing major coming into downtown. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways looking good. Only crashes on the screen right now are in the western suburbs. Carroll Stream, there's a crash at Gary Avenue on the southbound side at Army Trail Road. And then west of there, out near Wheaton and in that area, looks like there's a crash at Fabian Parkway and Roosevelt Road at the Technology Boulevard there. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, a very typical mid-February day. Cloudy skies, a high of 32, right around freezing. Right now it is mostly overcast and 28 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 32. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today with a high of 71. Right now it is mostly clear and 54. In sports, the Bulls lost their fifth straight, falling in Philadelphia last night, 118-111. Suns were off. Blackhawks had a 2-0 lead at Winnipeg and then gave up five straight goals en route to a 5-2 loss to the Jets. Hawks have lost three in a row and four out of five. College hoops, Notre Dame with a nice road win yesterday, Chief. They won at Clemson, 61-57. As you guys talked about last week, keeping their bubble hopes alive.
They're dead to me because they're on this ACC channel I can't watch.
Well, they're hard to watch on unless you pay up for the ACC network.
Can we even get it?
You can get it. I think you got to pay for it.
I've never been offered it at RCN that I know of.
I'm sure you can inquire and get it. All right. Just don't know the background on that, or at least the streaming version. Loyola with a 2-point win over Valparaiso, 70-68. And Northwestern, get this, they go to Rutgers, who's really good this year, a top 25 team for most of the year. Northwestern builds an 18-point lead, and looks like they're going to have the upset of the day. And, of course, Rutgers storms all the way back, takes it to overtime, and beats the Wildcats 77-73. Chief.
Interesting. What about the dude on the Cubs that died? Canarcion. What did he said most of his career was in Montreal?
I'll have to look at that story. I haven't heard that.
Also, dig up the email that I sent you. We'll talk about it with Jan here after I embarrass Jan. Not that he deserves it, but about the guy, the owner, the Pure than Pharaoh's wife, owner of Houston, now looks like he's up to his eyeballs in it. I say in that article. Anyway, they claim it went all the way to the top and actually had a name for it and everything else.
You're talking about the Astros?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we did a deep dive. Hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom, and you?
So happy to see and hear from you for a second, then I'm going to dig into you here a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So I just got this thing in the mail, or email, and it turns out that Jan's mom, also known as Ma Flanagan, had a cousin who married this Italian dude, who had a cousin who was another Italian dude. They had a kid, and the guy's name was Nicholas Ciascio. Now, who you might ask is Nicholas Ciascio? Nicholas Ciascio was Paul Powell's chief assistant. He claims he was with him when Paul Powell died, then he found the body. Of course, he wasn't, because he was in another hotel room cleaning out the shoeboxes full of cash. So we think Jan's really a liberal and a Chicago politician at heart.
Oh, I got to debunk that, because nobody called my mother Ma. Let me tell you that.
No, not you. I'm talking about people in the outfit, not the sons.
Oh, no.
She was mom to you, but she was Ma Flanagan to the people in the outfit that you never met.
She was sis to everybody.
Yes. That's the mom you never knew. That's
the mom I never knew.
Yeah, just saying.
I enjoyed your conversation with Frank in the last half hour about ancestry, too.
Well, you know more about this than anybody, but how do these people find this crap?
Well, if you're a subscriber to Ancestry and you post a tree that is public and anybody on that tree doesn't have a deceased status, they're visible. They're not visible. If they're marked as deceased, they're visible to anybody else who's a subscriber. And, you know, people on your tree who are deceased are fully visible. Any pictures you post of them, any stories, census records, anything you've got tied to those people, other users can see. If they're listed as living, they're not named, and their, you know, identity is implied in your tree, but it's listed as private. So you can see that there is somebody in that relationship, but their name is not disclosed, their birth information is not disclosed, nothing about them at all, no places, no nothing. But people, you know, can, you know, send you crazy stuff on Ancestry just like any other, you know, social media platform. So I get wacky communications sometimes. I think we're related. Like, no, we're not. But somebody thinks we are, and they, you know, start asking goofy questions and asking for stuff, and you just, you can block those people just as you can in any other social media platform. So there are some wing nuts in every, you know, community of people. So it's not surprising that Ancestry, which is social media for the dead, is what I call it. You get the same kind of, you know, communications from people who have a couple screws loose.
You think Ma Barker's kids knew that she was Ma to him? To her, she was just Ma. Just saying. You
know. Probably called her Mater.
Yeah. So here's a guy. Here's a guy after Matt Weber and Thomas Hall's heart. Get a load of this. Although Powell's government salary was never more than $30,000 a year. He was the Secretary of State, by the way. Government salary was never more than $30,000 a year. Shoeboxes, briefcases, and strongboxes with over $750,000 in cash were found in his hotel suite residence at the St. Nicholas Hotel in Springfield. Does Springfield even have a nice hotel? Within days of his death, another 50,000 was found in his office. In his hotel room, this reminds me of Maddie and Thomas, in this ratio. In his hotel room, he also had 49 cases of whiskey, 14 transistor radios, because you got to listen to music, and 2 cases of creamed corn, just in case you got hungry. So the 49 cases of whiskey, I'm thinking it'll last a lot longer than 2 cases of creamed corn. Just saying.
Well, I can remember back in the 60s that my parents used to remark on it when they renewed their driver's licenses. They would make checks payable to Paul Powell, not Secretary of State, not Secretary of State Powell, just Paul Powell. So any driver's license holder in Illinois who was renewing his or her license was writing, in effect, a personal check to Paul Powell. There was no way, really, to trace that to state business. So I would, no wonder he got all this money in his shoeboxes. I have to laugh, and I look back on it today, that was, you know, tolerated. There was obviously no watchdog around then to frown on this.
Well, he said he made most of the money.
Secretary of State he was. It was a complete blurring of the boundaries between personal and public functions.
Well, he said that he actually got most of the money from state contractors who he gave, you know, shall we say, nice jobs to. They gave him money back because the jobs were too much money. But the state got a $222,000 settlement from the state. I didn't know that. I learned something every day.
So, I didn't know that.
No, I mean, it's easy when it's cash, I guess. His estate was $4.6 million. $1 million of it was racetrack stock. Maybe you got somebody to look up to.
It's impressive, yeah.
It's pretty impressive. I don't know exactly why do you have 49 cases of whiskey in your hotel room? It had to be like a really big hotel room, or there wasn't much room for you.
Was he entertaining, or was he entertaining himself?
14 transistor radios. There's a picture of one here on Wikipedia. I forgot what a transistor radio looked like. I mean, God. Well, I know what a case of whiskey looks like, and I guess, but cream corn, he must like cream corn. Anyway, so, Jan, all kinds of stuff going on in the world, and they're impacting the markets or not impacting the markets. So far, the money being poured into the system, I think, for the coronavirus. Although the Fed is actually cutting back a little bit, which people are thinking we're going to the moon, better keep their eye on, because if they cut back anymore, I think we at least stall out. But, you know, we'll see. We were pushing 10 or 11% on the money supply, now we're down to 7.5%. So, that's a reasonable cutback. It's still way more than we're growing. What do you make of all this? Yeah, we've been talking, all weekend. You and I and Kevin have been fighting back and forth about it. Is every I had a full right wing weekend, so I'm a little feisty about the whole thing. It has nothing to do really with the politics. Well, I guess it does, but I'm sort of in the middle. I just don't, when we start changing the mores for people, I just don't know how far we're going to go with it. I mean, I had my people that are very close to me this weekend say they don't think Trump's lying because they don't listen to him. Oh, there was a good one. And another one says, well, what's he lying about? And I said, well, take, for instance, the employment numbers. Well, what do you mean? It's more, I said, we put 6 million jobs. I said, actually, it's more like 5.5 the 3 years he's been there, which, by the way, is pretty darn good. So I'm not pushing at that. She goes, well, it's the best that's ever happened. No, it's not. The 3 years before them were seven. Well, they must have been not good at jobs. You don't know that. I don't know that, but I guarantee he doesn't know that. Nor does he care. I mean, well, why would he say it? Therein lies the rub. Why would somebody go out of their way to say something? Why not just say, we've grown 5.5 million jobs since I've been here. We've extended the people hiring, which is harder to do at the end of the surge, which I get. And just tell the truth. The truth is good enough, Jen. I mean, the truth is a good story here. Well, why does it constantly have to be more than that and pushing the guy before you or an insult on everywhere? Is that now everybody has to do that just to run or to do something like that?
Yeah, I think they do. And, you know, the State of the Union address has always been an opportunity for that kind of padding or rounding up of numbers. They never round it down if they're favorable. You know, they round them up. Accountants do it, too. But it's always been, you know, an opportunity to inflate or, you know, puff about stuff, and especially if the State of the Union is being delivered in a year when that, you know, the person giving it is likely to or is going to be a candidate the following fall, where all, you know, stops are pulled out, and you've got to use this as an opportunity from, you know, a position of power to say, I want another 4 years at this job. So it doesn't surprise me that Trump inflates. He certainly inflates more than he invents. I would say that. I don't think.
Well,
I don't have a whole lot. But every president delivering a speech in that setting inflates, and I think they're obligated to. As in any, you know, parliamentary situation where your job depends on what you're saying, you can't downplay your success. You have to overplay it. And in you know, all the fact checking that takes place afterwards, you know, somebody will come at a number that satisfies more people than, you know, the initial recitation of facts, but in the moment you got to give it your best shot. And, you know, everybody has done it, and I don't think it's wrong necessarily. I think you have to look at it for what it is, though.
I think that it is. I have a different view of this because, I mean, you're in the law world where people essentially get to lie. My guy is innocent when you know he's dead, when you know he's not. Okay, it is a different, based on your role, you get to say stuff, right? For some reason, it's evolved that way. But in my side, it's not. Now, if I were to proofread the State of the Union, I would say in the 3 years I've been here, 5.5 million jobs have been created, which is an incredible record at this stage of an expansion. I could have written for him, in a way that was absolutely true and actually sounded better than he said. But it's not what he wants to do. It's a constant 3 years in, I'm better than the guy before me. Is it because he's liberal, because he's black, because he's younger? I mean, there's no reason for that name to be in there, and there's no reason for you to say that you did better than the guy before you when, if you're looking at the numbers, you didn't. But you could say it in a way where, at this stage of an expansion, nobody's ever done, and I bet nobody has, done 5.5 million jobs. Just don't say nobody's ever done 5.5 million jobs in 3 years, because it's flat-ass not true. I mean, say it in a way in which it is true and gives you credit for what has happened. That's all I'm saying. We don't need the other stuff in there is all my whole point.
Well, and maybe, you know, you don't in certain settings, and it doesn't, you know, hurt to say the closest number to the truth you can get. But again, the setting of this speech and its real purpose is to blow steam into the whole engine of getting reelected. So it doesn't offend me. It doesn't shock me. And, you know, if you ever had somebody get up and give real numbers, nobody could track them. If they had every decimal point in there, nobody would want to hear it. They change the channel. So it's you can't grasp it. If you round up a number from 5.5 to 6 million, I would say, well, that's, you know, that happens all the time. Nothing wrong with that. You better to make the case for a more compelling number than a less compelling number.
I,
if you're trying to justify your reelection.
I just, on a personal level, this rubs me seriously the wrong way. Not what you're saying, but because I do this show every morning and have for a while. And one thing I figured out that if you care about the truth, not that you don't make mistakes, you do, and not that you don't. A week from now, I'll read about the coronavirus, and it might be totally different numbers than we're given this week, and I'll be quick to point that out as quick as I can be. One conclusion I came to, Jan, is I don't ever care about remembering what I said. as long as I always speak the truth, I know if somebody asks me a question 2 hours from now, I'll answer it the same way. Right. There's a safety in that. And to me,
right.
That's
why we're not in politics, too, Tom.
Well, but I mean,
you really that kind of attitude is laudable, and you know I admire it, and I try to adhere to it too. But in politics, it doesn't get you very far.
Well, but this is the part I don't get, because you and Maddie for sure are way more into this modern technology, and I don't doubt that in 1895 on a whistle stop tour, you could say. You loved women to a women's group in Peoria, and 50 miles away, where all men's group say they should be beaten every week, and nobody'd ever connect the two, unless there was some knave of a newspaper guy riding with you, which he probably wasn't. But now in this day and age, how do these guys not know that 30 seconds afterward somebody's going to say, "Hey, you bleeping liar"? You said some guy. I mean, how do they think they're going to get away with it? I don't think they're going to get away with it on a podcast. Yet these guys
I was reading about the Andrew Johnson impeachment, and one of the things he was impeached for, you know, it was buried in the I don't know how many counts there were, but there was many counts. But one of them was this speaking engagement that he engineered to try to sell his soft pedaling on Reconstruction to the country, and he made, it was called Swing Around the Circle. So he went from Washington out west to Chicago, back through the South, and up to Washington again, and it was a total disaster because he was drunk for many of the speeches and was just fighting with the audience and saying crazy things and showed himself to be, you know, not quite stable or dependable. And, you know, that was enough to get, I mean, that speaking trip probably was the thing that stimulated the impeachment drive, you know, that got him into a trial. So it does work against presidents when they're clearly, you know, disconnected. But, you know, I don't think there's any president in my memory that is disconnected from reality, but they have to tweak it in a way that's most favorable to them, or they have no business running for that job. So I forgive a lot of the lying or distortion, because this is what you have to do in this kind of a setting. It's speaking to the broadest possible audience. You can't hold yourself to a very fine standard, and you certainly can't expect your opponents to do that.
Well, Jan, where is everybody?
They're going to bloviate and you know, do the same thing against you. So you have to kind of bolster your position and stand by it and hope that somewhere in between what you're saying and what your opponents say, there is some way that people can parse out who's more correct than the other one. But it's never about being completely accurate.
Well, everybody
I don't think those people try to be particularly accurate all the time belong in politics.
Well, if you don't have any kind of principles at all, you've just become what you detest if you're trying to change anything. Right?
Oh yeah, if you're just, you know, if you're disconnected, or you're devious, or you openly lie about motives to do things, and, you know, that people will sniff that out eventually if there's a reasonably fair press and commentators.
Well, unless you're dealing with a group that loves it when you do it,
right? Or who hates them and don't believe anything that he says.
But so I'm not in
the mode we are now.
Well, but how do you get to the point where there? I've known. Well, I've said this before. There's like three levels of BS, Jen, in this world, I think. You know, one is your mother's on her deathbed and she says, "Did you have a good day trading today?" You're going to say yes, even though you really didn't, because you really don't want to talk about your trading that day because your mom's got an hour to live, right? So I'd say that's probably innocuous level one. Then there's some that people will, you know, they tell their kids, "Don't worry, we'll go on vacation next year when you're broke this year," or something. And maybe even have an intention of doing it, right? Then there's people who, whatever they think sounds the best, they just say it, whether it's true or not. And I've met a few people like that, and it's really interesting. But and you don't even mind their company, really. I mean, you don't mind having a beer with them or whatever. They might actually be fun to be around. But you never let them watch your dog. You never work with them. You never trust them with a buck, right? So, I mean, so there is this middle ground between, I mean, I know if I ran for governor of Illinois and I knew the pensions are the problem that I know they are, and my first speech is to the police department, the first thing I wouldn't say is, "By the way, I'm cutting all your pensions in half." But I would have to say something in regard to this pension stuff is a problem, and we're going to have to look at it, and otherwise we're really You know, we're not going to have enough people left paying for the people's pension. I mean, you've got to give it in such a way where it's not, you know, it's maybe not the whole story like you're saying, but you also can't say, I'm running on a, at least I couldn't, I'm running on a, everybody gets every nickel they've been promised, and the day after I get in office, I say, that's not what I meant at all. I mean, there's shades to this. And that's why when people talk about Trump, my girlfriend included, I'll say, you know, I can't make any decision for anybody. I said, but there is a limit at which you can't go past. And the example I use is Hillary. Once I found out that she let people's money or trades in her account that weren't hers, I wouldn't vote for that lady for coyote catcher. Or at all. I wouldn't want her in my house. That was my barrier. Because that was my living, and if everybody did that in the trading floor, you'd have nothing but chaos. So she doesn't get to do it. So now all of a sudden you've got this guy who just says whatever he says over the top of his head and insults everybody. And people think it's cool, they love it. Everybody likes somebody, you know, the bad boy to get away with crap when they can't, something. But everybody's gotta have their own spot. You know, okay, if he comes and pees on my front lawn, maybe that's it but whatever it is, there's something. I mean, you and I could campaign for Matt Weber to be the CEO of his company because we honestly believe in him. And six months into it, he would never do this, by the way. He's spending money on somebody who's not his wife at a resort hotel and charging the company. You know what, Jan? He's got to go. As much as we love him and as much as he's doing a good job. I'm saying.
My favorite example of this is Joe Barrios, our, you know, late great Cook County assessor.
Yep.
Who, you know, is no longer the assessor, and the reason he isn't is because he told the honest to God truth. You know, he was shamelessly admitting, I'm not bound by an ethics ordinance. I can put anybody in my family on the payroll, and I don't care who doesn't like it. I mean, he was totally honest, totally upfront about it, and people were shocked that anybody could be so disconnected from their public that they think that was somehow okay. And, you know, I talked to a precinct captain around here when they were, you know, she was soliciting signatures for, you know, getting back on the slate, and she said that nobody on this block is signing for him. They're signing for everybody else, but not for him, because everybody saw that as, you know, this guy was not just a doofus, but he's a real crook, and it was because he was totally honest about his attitude. Had he schmoozed and, you know, lied about it or done some other way to cover his tracks, he might still be assessor. But here's an example where being honest, you know, you got to be careful what you're honest about and who can really smell a rat because you're honest. If you think you're just fine and you tell the truth about it and people know there's nothing that makes me want to vote for you now, you're toast, as you should be. So there's a real price to be paid for being honest, and you have to be careful that, you know, you don't cross the line and show yourself to be utterly corrupt.
Well, but there's another way to say that. I mean, why isn't if you've got that job, first of all, in full disclosure, not that I am the assessor, that's considered a part-time job, which probably nobody other than you knows. And his real job was a lobbyist in Springfield, right?
Right.
Well,
no, and you know, committeeman. I mean, he was I think he was the Hispanic caucus or the Puerto Rican caucus. I mean, he had a political position in the party too. He was party leader for a while at the end. So,
well, okay,
Cook County Democratic Party leader.
So why not just say, if you're going to do this, I mean, because people in Chicago will take the truth instead of saying I can hire any hack family member whenever I want for any amount of money. Which, you know, it doesn't sound all that good, right? Why don't you say something like, I'm Jan Flanagan. The guy put in that job is my brother Tom. By the way, Tom's been in the job for 2 years. He hasn't missed a day. He's one of my best employees. Why wouldn't I put him there? Because I know I can trust him. I know in his 10 other jobs he never missed a day and did a good job. We're happy to get him. Why not just say that?
Well, a smart politician would do that, especially if you could, you know, bend the message favorably to make it look like the county is saving money by having these qualified people in those jobs. I mean, maybe there was a case to be made for all I know, but he never thought it was necessary to make the case. He just thought that this was his, you know, freedom to do whatever he wanted here, and the public be damned. And people just read that the way anybody would read it.
Well, they read attitude. Yeah, they read attitude. I'm above the law, and what he should be saying. Anyway, S&P futures down 75 cents, NASDAQ futures up 175. Be right back. We'll ask John about his feelings on whether the patronage system is better than the civil service system. We'll ask him when we come back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Dr. Jackson. I'm tomorrow, Mr. John Flanagan. Mr. Lawyer John Flanagan. So we over Redwood lawyers here, you think, Manny? We got too many of them. They gang up. They're all right wing.
We become cynical in our old age time, we lawyers. You know?
Actually, Brennan's not right wing. So he's our one. We got, what are we, one and five on the lawyers, a little bit of right wing. S&P futures down 275, NASDAQ futures down 4.25. Only stock doing anything really is Apple down 350. Otherwise, it's a very quiet morning. Can't seem to figure out what's going on with the coronavirus or not, but clearly we got the markets going, we've got the economy going, we've got the election going, we've got things going on with politics and things, constant stuff out of Washington. Boy, what if we ever just had a guy at this point, John, where somebody became president and just said, you know what? It was sort of like getting Lovie Smith after Mike Ditka. You know, all of a sudden, like, this guy's boring as hell. He's actually going to sit there and, you know, meet with a cabinet guy a day, figuring out what's going on in their various areas and how to fix it. And what is with the constant, I mean, I know you're, we're going to talk a little bit about the patronage system here in a second, but what is with the constant drive toward whatever it is, anti-environment, anti-whatever? Now, we got to have oil drilling on the monument sites in Utah. John, we're wanting a wash in oil. Is this relentless stuff where there's people, and usually they're old and white, not always, because we have an awful lot of black aldermen here, just as crooked as the white ones, maybe worse. So it's not like it's a color thing. One thing you don't have to worry about with color is a bunch of crooks on each side, right? Why do we have to keep driving this thing to find a public tree that one guy gets to cut down and sell, or find a public piece of property you got to give to somebody so he can sell it? And if it was done properly with the rest of us getting their piece of the barrel of oil, I guess I wouldn't be so upset with it. But we never do get our proper percentage, because that is essentially our land, right? It never happened. It's all about taking other people's stuff and giving it to a few people. And you know what? Why does everybody on the right think it's their God-given thing to do that? And when somebody on the left says, hey, wait a minute, there might be a tree there we want to save. Oh, no, he's some kind of tree hugger. He's some kind of ass. I mean, why is the one side so much better?
Well, it's always been this oppositional tug of war. And you look at land management policies under Obama, where there was a huge grab of land for the federal government. Just, you know, I don't have the acreage numbers in front of me, but it was astronomically increased under Obama, which effectively puts that land off limits to development, you know, mining for resources, whatever else. It now becomes, you know, locked up in the federal bureaucracy how that land is used, doled out, and that just really infuriated
the
community, and it infuriated people, you know, nearby. They saw this as a power grab by the federal government. What's the government's interest in this? So the pushback is, you know, let's keep it, you know, available for development, for mining, for
In Illinois, again, you're the expert on this, so I'm not going to debate you on any of this stuff. I'm going to say virtually everything in Illinois, except for a few spots, is owned by somebody, right?
Well, I couldn't say how much. I suspect, you know, the absolute majority is, you know, held by private interest.
All right, so
there's park district land, there's forests in the state of Illinois, there's U.S. properties in the state of Illinois. I mean, there's sprinkled all over the place. I don't know how it compares, but I would suspect there's more land not owned privately in Illinois than most people would realize.
Well, I mean, but contrast that with my buddy C.W., one of our first clients, who knew everything about Arizona. What do you tell me, 95% of the land out there is either owned by the federal government or the Indians or somebody?
Probably. You know, same in, you know, Nevada and Wyoming and rural states where the population is sparse. The feds have really, you know, grabbed a lot of that land.
I don't know if they grabbed it. They just, I don't Colorado, because, God, talk about a story from one day. Back when the traders had money, we used to go skiing. There was always somebody willing to want to sell us some property and blah blah blah. I mean, actually, I probably should have bought some, since we had all the money at the time. And it was dirt cheap, John, and really nice stuff. And but, you know, what do I know about ranching? Nothing. What do I know about birthing babies? About as much as I know about ranching, you know. And so, but I mean, you have if you had a ranch, you may not have all that much property, but if you have grazing rights for, you know, a dollar an acre a year for, you know, all this part of the whatever the national forest or national, that was a lot of dough. But I mean, the idea of who owned it almost didn't. It's a whole different world in Illinois. I mean, in Arizona, I think is even more so with the Indian tribes and stuff. I mean, when we talk about this land in Utah, I don't think anybody was there anyway. And then Obama said, okay, we're gonna expand the part that you can't do anything with, even though nobody's there. All of a sudden, a couple years later, oh, no, we're going to bring that back in case anybody wants to drill there, they can, even though nobody's there. I mean, I don't think anybody actually owns it. I mean, I think it's just back and forth to whether somebody wants to go in there and drill. Then the question is, you know, is it going to be the one or two buddies that pay, you know, are they going to pay $1 a barrel tribute is a different word, but or $20. I mean, who figured? It seems like with the attitude goes the cushy deal, sort of like Illinois. You know, with the attitude, who gets the contract on the Dan Ryan Expressway also gets the cushy deal on the, you know. I mean, what are we doing here? Do I trust any of these people that if somebody wants to go and drill in one of these places or 50 miles from the monument that Obama just taken the last 10. I don't really care, John, if you're 50 miles away. What I care about is it can be done properly. Is it going to be done cleanly? And when you're done, or is it going to be put back the way it was? And are we going to get our cut? I'm not about to debate whether or not it's, and I don't trust any of these people to do that, to be honest with you. When do we ever see it happen legitimately?
Right. Well, this was behind, you know, the Teapot Dome scandal in the early 20s, where it was, you know, government land that was being handed over in sweetheart deals to private oil concerns, and, you know, people got wind of it. It's like, who the heck are these people? Where do they fit in? Who put them to the head of the line? Once you give the federal government custody over this stuff, you really kind of shield, you know, what happens there from public scrutiny. You would think it would be the other way around, maybe, but it enables sweetheart deals, you know, to flourish. And that's one of the problems with having a bureaucracy in charge of anything that's of value. So I resist what Obama did, and I'm not surprised there's pushback against it now to keep this land available for private development, because there should be a tension between these two. And I think, you know, the opposing forces got the upper hand under Obama, and there has to be a pushback now.
Somebody must want something on somebody's land.
Oh, sure, of course, you know, and who knows what research has been done that's been, or projects that have been thwarted because of this. I'm not saying it's not without hidden motives, that people aren't being, you know, totally honest about what's at stake here, but when has that ever been the way things function? There's always people keeping their, you know, interests close by so they don't, you know, jack up the price or whatever. They want it for themselves. The federal government does the same thing too. So.
But I honestly don't have an issue, Jan. Would say there's a monument somewhere. I mean, a big rock formation. It looks like, what's the one that was in the movie where the guys were coming back and forth from outer space? The one in Wyoming? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, the
was the movie where
Shiprock, not the thing.
The whatever, but they.
Mexico.
People kept making, in their mind, they kept making the thing out of clay and everything. I don't even know where it was. That wasn't in the movie. Anyway, so they. Kerry Gar was in it, and who was the guy? Close Encounters. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, okay, so here's a monument. It's out in the middle of a bumbly country, right? And so you and I are president. Imagine that, the two-headed sword. And we say, you know, let's make this a national thing. Nobody's out here anyway. Let's say 20 miles on each side, make it some kind of a national park. So we do. We don't know spit, Jan. It seems enough to us. 20 years later, we're dead and gone, and somebody walks in and says, hey, some idiot wants to put a strip mine like on the 21st mile around this place. And the next president goes, well, that's not going to happen. We're not going to have a national park right next to a strip mine. The first two guys, the idiots, Chief and John, should have said 30 miles. So we'll get these idiots out of there. We don't need that. We got enough oil now. So they make it 30 miles. Now, of course, some right-winger old white guy is going to say, no, that land, we might not even own it. No, that land's mine. That money belongs to me. I get to make this eyesore out there. No, you don't. You know, I mean, I'm saying there's always a yin and a yang here, John. I mean,
Sure.
And just because, I mean, we're talking about a country where people came here and cut down the entire North Woods because they thought they were theirs, right? And sold it. And nobody got a dime for it. You know, and we're doing the same thing. I mean, the coolest part is this, the Permian Basin. How much of that property is owned by a defunct railroad that never had to give them the land back to the federal government? I mean, you couldn't print fiction like this.
Right.
But, anyway, back to Well, because the market's so quiet today, we're talking about this stuff. What's the worst you think could happen to international finance with this thing in China? What's your feeling? Frank and I were going back and forth all weekend. There's something not adding up here, Jan. Is it the fact that this doctor died, 34 years old, is not a good thing? Evidently, the amount of people it's infecting in hospitals is way off the chart, that they don't even know how they're going to care for these people because everyone in hospitals getting infected. And yet, young people don't seem to be getting infected, kids, to a huge extent.
Yes.
So, I mean, what.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of troubling things behind the numbers. I mean, the last number I saw this morning was something like 40,000 plus confirmed cases.
Yeah.
Oh, 910 confirmed deaths. And again, this confirmation process that is behind these numbers is, I think, very suspect. And I don't think that those are dependable numbers. I just, everything surrounding how this thing has exploded makes me doubt, you know, what these numbers say. Now, another example is Xi Jinping's whereabouts. Where is this guy? He's apparently either ill, maybe not because of the virus, but maybe he is ill, maybe he's dead, for all we know. But there's all sorts of unexplained things that you know, traditionally have gone along with things that China is interested in covering up.
Happened,
twisting, to keep people from asking questions about it. And this is rife with all of those suspicions here. So I suspect things are far worse than these numbers would indicate, and that the implications for international finance are cataclysmic. And if this thing mutates, which, you know, historically these things do, there is no telling where this will, end up, and what that impact will be on trade and getting things finished. And, businesses that seem to have nothing to do with China are going to be failing. So I don't know. I wish we had better information or more credible information, but I doubt seriously the information that we're getting. So my worst fears are kind of lurking here.
I'm somewhat curious, Jan, is that even though we're not getting the information out of there as much as we would like, but I sent you that one article last night regarding Z. What's his first name?
Xi Jinping.
He did what Trump or Obama would have done. He put his vice president on that job and sent him there. Well, he stayed clear of it.
like sending Biden to Ukraine.
I was talking to Kevin last night. I go, I know Obama threw Biden under the bus somewhere. Where was it? you go settle this one. It's too hot for me. So he's staying somewhere out of the group. But it seems to me that there's enough going on where we must have samples here by now. We've got these cruise ships all over the place. And you would think you'd have read something from somebody. Out of all the winter flus we get, from the worst to the easiest year, there's got to be, how many strains, you think, Jan? 50, 30, I don't know. No, I mean, where does this thing rank? I mean, is it... It appears we've gone past SARS in terms of cases and in deaths, but nobody seems to think it's as virulent as SARS, and yet it's not dying like SARS did.
Right, the numbers for SARS, have already been dwarfed. So, the thing I think that has really panicked people is its localization in the most populous country, with trade and dealings all over the world, and travel, and you name it, everything is so interconnected that the possibility for spreading it, for and given that China is such a close society, getting good information about it are just horrific. It doesn't bode well for people getting settled down about this stuff. It's pretty easy to fear the worst and not trust anything that you're getting. So it's unfortunate, but this is kind of the bag we have here. And if it had surfaced any place else, if it had moved in a different direction, we'd have a completely different public mindset about this.
Well, but I think it's at a point
the fear
now
factor
where
is really starting to get some steam behind it.
I think the people here are should be. We're 3 months into it. Almost 2.5. I think the people here should have be telling us exactly how virulent it is. I mean, we've been studying the thing for 6 weeks.
Well, yes, and you know, I think you know, here's where again, you know, the honesty factor, telling people what you really know or what you suspect, is probably considered more dangerous by public officials than, you know, sugarcoating it or soft peddling it until somebody gets a better handle on what's really happening. And, you know, it's always been the case when things like this have arisen that, that people at the top, you know, politically and cities, you know, whatever, there's no reason for panic. That this almost has to be the mantra, because panic is bad for business too, bad for the disease too. And so there is always a you know, desire not to jump to the forefront of the doomsayers, because you unleash things that, that are very hard to control, and you don't maybe serve the public interest as well as if you take a more measured approach. So there's always the desire that this thing will go away and go away quickly, and this will all have been a panic over nothing. But, you know, we have lots of history to tell us that it could go the other way.
Well, I mean, well, when we were youths, not to say we're not 40 years old anymore, I know everybody I know had measles. So my view of measles, including me, my view of measles was a pain in the ass for a week, and I don't know if anybody died. I mean, it's just something that happened. Yet I also know, as I've gotten older and read a little more, that the last thing you want is a measles epidemic in Sudan or someplace, or Yemen, or someplace where there's just been a flood, or whatever. I mean, because it could be very much of a problem there, when everybody doesn't have their own, you know, a nice warm home and a chicken soup. I mean, it's a big difference. So I'd like to know on a scale by now, if everybody in the U.S. gets this thing, if I get it, do I have a temperature for 3 or 4 days? I stay away from the office for a while, unless everybody else has already got it, and I stay warm and I eat, and 10 days from now I'm okay. Or am I liable to croak? I mean, I think we should know that by now, don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, the case, two cases here, or out in Elk Grove Village, they've gone home. You know, I think they're being watched by the CDC, so they've got some way of, you know, checking in, monitoring their recovery. But the two cases that had everybody panicked, you know, 2 weeks ago here, seems to have gone in the right direction, so that people are not fearing what seemed to be a possibility then, that it, you know, everybody in the hospital would get it, or everybody in Elk Grove Village, or, you know, Panhandle of Cook County would be sick by now. That hasn't happened. So, and the people who presented the symptoms and were positive have been discharged. So all that's to the good. I mean, it shows that there is a, you know, an outcome that is not, you know, disastrous in every case. So, but what that conceals, you know, in the other numbers and the people who are susceptible to this and don't come get, you know, clean bill of health and die from it, and what those real numbers are, there's a real desire not to let that stuff get too active in the public discussion, because it's terribly frightening, and it's destructive of the world economy, political systems, unrest, you know, international rivalries. Everything is accentuated in times of illness or panic like this. So there's a real desire to keep it under hat, and I understand that. I can appreciate it. And we who know nothing other than what we're told about it have to kind of accept that, I think.
Well, there's two reasons to contain it and panic about it. One is you don't want other people getting it, which I understand that. If you contain it, you don't want to do that. The other is the people who have it are liable to die. Now, if they're not liable to die, I'm not near as worried about choice A as I am before, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody controls the common cold. And nobody controls regular flu, really, even though, right? But it's not normally, you know, other than awful to have while you have it, it's not, although 50,000 people a year die from it, right? Or,
yeah.
Or die.
Well, and not even the, you know, you don't have to necessarily die from it to, you know, cause long-term suffering,
right,
because of it. I was just reading not too long ago about how when Woodrow Wilson went to the Versailles Peace Conference, at the end of the war in early 1919, and Wilson had been, you know, vehement supporter of the 14 points, League of Nations, no, you know, territorial grab by the Allies after World War One. He was the opposition to Lloyd George and Clemenceau, and you know, the Europeans were going to see this as an opportunity to really stick it to Germany, and Wilson was, vehemently opposed to that. He gets the flu, and he's bedridden in Paris for about 2 weeks, and you know, a lot of people didn't think he was going to pull out of it, and he skipped all the conference because of that. So the outcome of the Treaty of Versailles, which, you know, by the time it got solidified after Wilson recovered, there's no way Wilson was going to be listened to. It had sort of been carved in stone when he wasn't there. And that's always struck me as something, you know, that the whole post-World War I political climate in some ways can be traced to it's a casualty of the flu epidemic, in many ways, just demographically, but even politically, too. So who knows what the outcome of some of this it really is. It's long-term, and it's not seen at the time, but it really has a kind of rolling effect in history.
I would call that the Versailles, instead of the Versailles Peace Conference, I would call that the Versailles Let's Set Up the Next War Conference.
Oh, yep, and that's certainly, you know, it's like they were trying really hard to do that, and they succeeded.
We've said this on the show before, but you can't always figure you got the same listeners. You know, was the young, brilliant economist for that?
Keynes? Home,
yeah, Keynes.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the everybody was so exhausted at that point. You know, families who had lost family members, you know, businesses that were destroyed. You know, Europe was a train wreck, just as it became a train wreck again after World War II. Everybody was just, you know, so done in by it. And then you have a flu epidemic on top of it that kind of has been pushed aside in history.
Yep.
But all of this, I think, is, you know, it's part of the same kind of destructive pattern that, you know, people respond in situations that are somewhat mysterious or frightening, and you don't get good outcomes when you've got spasmodic planning or overreaction or underreaction because you don't have good information. It shows how fragile this whole thing really is.
Well, nothing could be a bigger bleep up than the Versailles Conference.
I agree.
I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm almost at a point where it's not World War One or World War Two. It was the 40 Years' War with a few years off.
Right, like the 100 Years' War or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's we just. I mean. And the interesting part is I was reading one of Audrey's friends who really digs into a lot of stuff she sees on PBR and so forth, and she always asks me questions about it. She was asking me questions about this Stiglitz guy. He shared a Nobel Prize 1 year, and how he's a big follower of John Maynard Keynes. And I'm thinking, how does anybody follow the guy? I mean, there have been so few instances of pure fiscal policy ever that how do you even know that they work or don't work? The idea that there's been that there was stone cold fiscal policy without any monetary policy going on was totally neutral at the time. Can you name a time on that, John? I mean, I know I'm gonna have to read. Well, I'm gonna read the whole monetary history of the United States, but I don't know that there ever has been. So how do you even know if it works?
No, and only in retrospect can you look back and say, boy, that was a disaster, or if we'd done this instead, you know, maybe we'd, but it's all, you know, what ifs.
Yeah.
And the theoreticians behind this are, you know, they don't have very much at stake other than their own kind of, you know, platform or pedestal that they stand on. So that whether, you know, it gets implemented in their lifetime or down the road or whatever, they are somewhat uninvolved in it. They don't really pay a price if it goes wrong, so.
All right, well, John, we got a dash, buddy, and thank you very much. We'll see you this week, I think.
I hope so.
S&P futures up 50. S&P futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 675. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman, and we'll see what the charts say. See if he's got a flu chart. We'll be right back. Stocks with Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know.
Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just from Matt Weber. SP Futures unchanged. Unchanged around 16 last night for a nanosecond before they started rallying back off that. But they did rally back off that. SP Futures, they are unchanged. The Nasdaq Futures, up 475. Dow Futures down 22. Around over in Europe, we're generally to the downside, but not much here. DAX down 41.3%, FTSE down 16.2%, CAC around down 23.3%. So like I say, downside but not much. Nikkei down 142.6%, Shanghai up 14.5%, Hang Seng down 162.6%, so mixed over there. The bonds, again, these things are 156 is the 10-year rate, been stuck there for a while. 1-0.40, Japan sneaking down, -0.05. We've got oil down 9 cents, 50.23 as well, become very, very quiet here at a low number. Brent 54.22, -0.25. Natural gas under 180, 178. That is unreal. Those are numbers I never thought I'd see. RBOB gas, 152. We've got gold is up 279, 1576. Is if you're bullish gold, you're saying it's making a bottom here or hanging in there for the next rise up. If you're bearish, I guess you can say it hasn't been able to go any higher than here. So that's where that all is. Silver up 7 cents. Copper, which some people thought was going to head south after China told Kenya and somebody else they didn't want to cut back on shipments, is hanging in there at 255. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues starting to sprout up here. Lakeshore Drive southbound just before Lawrence Avenue. There's a crash blocking the right lane, and this is causing some congestion coming toward downtown from the north side on Lakeshore Drive. Hollywood to Monroe is up to 32 minutes, so solid traffic. Expect delays on Lakeshore Drive heading toward downtown on the north side. No issues on the Edens. Traffic building steadily on the Kennedy, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. South side, looks like Dan Ryan inbound at 47th Street. There's a vehicle fire reported on the on-ramp to 47th. So some crews are on the scene there looking to get that put out, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown. Looks like I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Off the expressways, out in Downers Grove, Main Street at Ogden Avenue, there is a crash. And just north of there, Grace Street, northbound at East Parkside Avenue, which is East St. Charles Road, there is a crash as well. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, cool temperatures. We'll hover right around freezing with a high of 32. So right around normal for this time of year. Right now it's cloudy and 29 going up to a high of 32. For our Phoenix listeners, rainy today with a high of 71. Right now it's mostly clear and 55. In sports, Blackhawks had a 2-0 lead over Winnipeg and gave up 5 straight goals, losing to the Jets 5-2. Blackhawks have lost 3 in a row and 4 out of 5. Bulls, no better. They were tied going into the fourth quarter at Philadelphia and then lost 118-111, being outscored 35-28 in the fourth. Bulls have now dropped 5 straight as they limp into All-Star Weekend, which is in Chicago this coming weekend. College hoops, Notre Dame with a nice road win at Clemson, 61-57. Loyola topped Valparaiso, 70-68. And Northwestern blew an 18-point lead at Rutgers, falling in overtime, 77-73. By the way, Chief, Kevin says on Twitter regarding your ACC network beef, he says, Tom, take the 2-week free trial of YouTube TV. It gets you the ACC network for all but the last Notre Dame game, which if you ask nicely, I'll take you to see in person. Back to you.
Well, that would mean hooking the Twitter up to my TV.
Not the Twitter, but
whatever. YouTube.
It would mean you would have to get something to facilitate YouTube TV. Either a smart TV, a Roku, or a Fire Stick, or an Apple TV, or any one of those
devices. I have a smart TV. I don't have a smart TV operator.
If you have a smart TV, you just search. You can search YouTube TV as an option, and you can do the free trial and see if you like it. And you could ultimately cut the cord if you wanted to. But worst case, you still get the 2-week free trial, and you get the Notre Dame games on ACC Network.
Don't even start with. Hey, David, how are you? Don't even start with.
I'm fine.
With the cut the cord bit, because Audrey's got all these shenanigans out of her place now. God, are they a pain in the ass? She's got the Fire Stick. She's got something.
What does she have on the Fire Stick?
I have no idea. All I know is whenever you go on there, all they do is talk about the things you can see, and they hunt and peck through the things. She and her pals, which are always hanging around, which is fine. I love them. They hunt and peck on the thing for a half hour till finally I'm dozed. They never can pick a show, and then they find a show they like, and it's an extra money.
That sounds like your company, not necessarily the technology.
Whatever they get the one that is on there, they list everything. So then you'll pick one, and they go, oh, no, that one's Netflix. Netflix, you need money for that one. And whatever you want to use, it's an upgrade which they don't have. So to watch
again, that's the company you're with. If you're with me, I know what I have, and I can. Yeah. It doesn't take 30 minutes of searching.
This is a different group, so
anyway. Don't blame the technology.
Like I said, at least I know I don't have it. No, I have all this stuff on my TV. I could hook right into it.
Not ACC Network, apparently.
Well, I mean, no, but it all comes from the cable, so.
I think you could, if you didn't want to go to the internet streaming route, like Kevin suggested, which is a 2-week free trial, which, you know, it'd be free, you could probably contact your provider and say, hey, how much is ACC Network for the rest of the season? And they may be like, yeah, well, we'll add $20 on your next month bill, and maybe it's worth it for that. Maybe it's not.
You know what's bad about the bill? I don't mind. I actually don't mind paying the cable company. My bill's about $180 for the month. $60, $62 is for the city.
Yeah, they're relentless.
What is that all about? I don't. I'm anyway. David, how are you?
I'm fine.
So here we have here's an article by Jesse Pound. Boy, there's a name. China's consumer price index 5.4% in January. It's all because of the virus. It couldn't have anything
to do. Dipped?
No, it's up.
Oh, up 5.4.
Couldn't have anything to do with the $200 billion they poured into the system, you think?
Well, I think that, and you know, I'm not familiar with, you know, the retail atmosphere there, but I would guess that, you know, when you quarantine cities and states and the like, that the cost of moving food in and medical supplies is increased.
Yep.
And, you know, just masks, gloves, this, that. You know, I mean, it all factors in. They had the CEO of Yum China on today, and he was saying, you know, hey, they value the business and the relationship they've had and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And they've given out 46,000, you know, free dinners of, you know, chicken and all this other stuff, you know, to hospitals and victims, patients, the like. But, you know, even though they've given those free, you know, because they value the relationship that they've had, the cost of gloves and masks and this and that and getting, you know, the product where they need it has gone up. So they've had to raise the prices of the goods sold.
The again, my right-wing weekend, a Saturday night, I suggested, why don't we go over to, we have this really good Thai place in Orland that you can bring your own wine. The people there are spectacular. She buys all the stuff fresh every day. Oh, no, I'm not going to any. This isn't Audrey. I'm not going to any Oriental Asian place. What are you talking about? Why? Why do I know somebody's not there from...
Get the virus, right?
Yeah. How do I know somebody didn't come in there from China? It's a Thai place. I don't like the Chinese. Oh, no, I'm not going there. I don't care what it is. Vietnamese, Korean.
I mean they've closed the borders to anyone who's been to China for weeks now.
I know. I was stunned. I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyway, but I mean, I wonder.
But if you say that, I'll just say in this household, if I ever say, "What are you talking about?" That's it. I might as well sleep and eat outside.
Well, I mean, sometimes you hear some statement and you're like, "Where did that come from?" Is it?
That's better. Yeah. Where did that come from is better than what are you talking about.
I guess, but I mean, is the thought,
at least in this household,
Manny, has the thought ever dawned on you that we couldn't go over to D's and have an ordered dinner?
Did the thought dawn on me that I couldn't go? You can't go to D's anymore. They don't have a restaurant room.
Well, but you can. But I mean,
you can order a takeout.
Right.
That's
so,
it.
Would the thought ever cross your mind that you it's unsafe to get takeout there?
No, definitely not.
These are the kind of hairpins I'm hanging with. Is what I'm saying. It's a.
I get it.
So, all right, David. How we have the end of the week. All we're so concerned about the virus. We finished at a record high, even though. Well, no, we didn't. Well, Friday was a down day, but
Friday
still was
down.
Up, but still was an up week, and I don't really see. Although I have seen the. The increase in money supply and the Fed balance sheet all of a sudden stop in the last 3 weeks. The balance sheet is hung even, and the money supply...
Well, Powell said he was going to slow that down.
Okay, well, he did. And now the money supply increases down from 11 to high sevens, which is still higher than the economy. But
right.
It's not what it was. So the goose we saw in the market, you know, for the first month of this year... is not quite as goosey, shall we say. So are we going to stall here or what? I don't think it's enough to turn us around, but I don't think the push is there either like it was 3 weeks ago.
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, it really is. I mean, from a technical situation, you know, just the weakness the two Fridays ago and then this last Friday has reduced some of the upside extension. The seasonal patterns are negative. The VIX, it's, you know, around 15 plus. So, you know, I just, you know, you get the blips and blurps, the Teslas and the like that, you know, goose the indexes a little bit. So I don't foresee, you know, a 5-7% correction right now, unless, you know, there is dramatic increase in the coronavirus. And I kind of think that, you know, as the incubation period, you know, comes, which, you know, we measure, I think, January 23rd, you know, in 2 weeks. So basically we're there, but they're saying February 7th. So that, you know, it pushed out to the 21st of February, week from Friday. I kind of think that the next few days we'll probably see, you know, increase in the reporting of cases and, God forbid, but likely deaths. You know, it'll keep a lid on the market, but I also don't see the way the market responded for most of last week until Friday. You know, it looks back to SARS and MERS and avian flu and swine flu and all these other things, Ebola, you know, whatever, that came and went, and they're going to look more at, you know, earnings, which I think have not been spectacular, but they've been, you know, 70% above estimates, and in politics. I mean, I do think also that the Democrats, you know, have the floor right now because the Republicans are a foregone conclusion. So with the caucuses and then New Hampshire coming and then Super Tuesday and whatever, I kind of think that will also keep a lid on the market because, you know, most of the progressive, quote-unquote, and liberal to even socialist, you know, policies would not tend to be good for the market. So I see more downside than upside, but I think it will be orderly.
I think, you know, you might be right with it. Or who knows at this point who's going to be right where, but I get this odd feeling that the dude last week, I don't know if I talked to you about this on Thursday, because the guy was on Thursday, I think, David, so I probably did not. He charts stuff, not more of a fundamentalist than you are, and certainly more of a detailed fundamentalist than I am. He was saying that, according to his figures, and you look at the earnings of the biggest companies, 95% of the market uptick in the last year has been increased valuation as opposed to increased income. Say 90, but I mean, say he's wrong. Say 85, say 80. I don't have the statistics in front of me, David, but I'm going to say that's never happened 2 years in a row. That in order for us to have a good year this year, these guys better do better.
Yeah, I can't disagree with his numbers because I don't know the numbers and I don't examine those numbers. The one thing that I would have a strong guess would be that it's not just valuation, but it's stock buybacks.
Well, what he's saying is that if a stock is making $10 a share and it's trading 300, and the next year it's making $15 a share, and it's trading 450, that's one thing. If the next year it's trading 450, and now you're making 10 a share, I think that's what he's saying.
The biggest example is Apple, which is the biggest company and the biggest contributor to the major indexes. And, you know, depending on who you believe, which accountant, some say the earnings were up 2% and some say they were down 2%, but let's just give the benefit of the doubt and say they were up 1%, you know, and the stock, you know, more than doubled.
Right, I'm sure.
And certainly had a huge influence, you know, in the indexes. Now, obviously, there was some revaluation based on, you know, looking at the company not just as a hardware company, but as a service provider, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, streamlining and this and that and the other. And you know, recurring services via subscription and whatever, so some of that is justified. But then you also have to look at, you know, the stock buybacks, which remain huge, and, you know, that's why the stock doubled much, 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 much more than, you know, the slight increase or slight decrease in earnings.
You think there's ever going to be, and I'm not hoping for this, clearly, because we had too many people long, David, you and I, if the market takes a 50% correction, which I doubt, that somebody's ever going to say to the Apple board, hey, why'd you idiots pay $300 for a stock that's now trading 150? I mean, if you look at all the purchases that IBM has made in the last 30 years that I've been here, how many of them have been a good buy?
No, I get it.
Well,
and you know, I'm not saying Apple's the only one that made clever purchases, you know, and certainly helped by Warren Buffett. But you know, you can go down the list, you know, Under Armour and many others that bought back stock and oh, it's worth more, and it wasn't, and their PEs were revalued downward rather than upward.
How do you suppose? I wish I knew more about. All I can figure out is what my people tell me. We have a contributor to the show. He's been on a few times. A guy who lives in Singapore. I wonder, I should probably call him and find out what the story is with the virus over there, because they've had a bunch of cases, I believe. But he tells me that just from how it works out, David, he don't really know what these people's numbers are, but he has to believe that the Asian corridor, for lack of a better term, United Airlines' biggest profit maker. He says, no matter how many bazillion miles you have, you don't get the. I mean, from what I understand, guys like Dr. J and whatever fly out to New York, you know, every day, same time. And a lot of the times, you get up to the gate and they just wave you into first class. They don't even take your miles, right? If you're there every week. I mean, I know Bill Bratz used to have the same thing, and John's on he's there all the time, so he should be treated right. I'm not saying he shouldn't. He should. If there's a spot up there and everybody should get it, it should be him. Rather than me, who flies once a year. So I'm not discouraged. But my buddy John Lee tells me that no way in hell, even if you're a 90 bazillion mile flyer and you want to go from coach to business class, they're not grabbing 50,000 miles for you or 40,000 miles if you're going to Hong Kong or someplace. I mean there's no give whatsoever. Because those guys are selling.
I should ask my son, because my son, you know, was married in mid-October, and they took their honeymoon, over New Year's Eve. They went for 2.5 weeks. They went to all parts of Asia. They took 10 flights, and he had, you know, over a million miles. I don't know what they used, but I know he was upgraded on several of those flights. But what they took or what they demanded, I have no idea. I should ask him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe give us a more current look, but according to Jan, boy, he goes, if you want, those upgraded seats are gold, and those planes are full.
I would presume so.
And now, what happens? I mean, what is United Airlines doing with the planes that normally fly back and forth to China every 2 days? Are you sitting next to the 737s on some tarmac someplace?
They're out in the same parking lot. That was really a good one, by the way.
Well, they flew their last 747, so it's the 777s and the 787s that fly that distance, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like you can put that plane into service between, you know, here in Cleveland.
No, I have no idea.
I mean, because we haven't heard. I mean, you know, when I say this, the reason why I'm concerned about it is 9/11, we're talking about companies that were in business for 60 years. They basically were out of business for 3 weeks and they went belly up. So let's hope the airlines are not as susceptible now as they were then. I think they are.
And in full disclosure, I own some United Airlines. I own some Delta because I like the long-term prospects. And you look at the multiples and, you know, they're 7 to 10. They look really cheap. But between the MAX and the China virus and whatever, it's been a disaster. United Airlines, you know, they haven't lowered guidance or whatever. They're projecting $12 to $13 a share. And, you know, so I thought, you know, 85 now, I sold some calls to protect, but you know, I thought $85, $90 a share, you give them a multiple on $12, the low end of their guidance, you know, of 10, you know, that's 120 at 90 less, you know, $3 in collected premium. That 87 looked like a bargain. Well, now it's 75. What kind of bargain is it?
Not such a good bargain, at least at this point. Well, it's up 80 cents today.
So stuff happens, as they say.
By the way, not 87, try 80. 80.31.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of, but I think they're in better shape this time. And what, Delta doesn't, they don't have any maxes, right?
No.
They don't.
But they do have China exposure.
Where do they fly to China from? Atlanta? They don't have a Western hub, do they? Or Salt Lake City is their Western hub, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they have Delta. I don't know if it's a hub, but they have a lot of flights out of Delta too, out of Denver too.
Okay. So, well, me, I don't. honestly, have no idea how to handicap this one, David. To be perfectly blunt, so I keep asking
everybody's answer. Look, like I said, you know, I'll take credit for good handicapping, you know, on some of the semiconductors, and I take, you know, the arrow in the eye, and you know, on handicapping the airlines. It's a tough call.
Well, here's a picture of Shanghai, China, which is not even, well, I mean, it's not, you know, spot central for sure. And there's a picture of this massive square or bazaar. Starbucks is closed. Something else is closed. There's like two people standing there.
Right.
I mean, it's that's not good. And, you know, you wonder how far. Hopefully, it doesn't go too much. But, hey, I did want to ask you. Frank tweeted me last night, or not tweeted me. He sent me an email saying that the China said they're going to stop or cut back on their shipments in from Kenya and someplace else on copper. Yet copper really isn't down today. What's your read on some of these commodities? We haven't talked about that in a while. You know, some of these.
You mentioned gold, and I'll tell you the chart, especially the top step now is April, because February is pretty much out of the way, and there is a nasty looking head and shoulders top, you know, on that. Now, if you take out, you know, 1600 meaningfully, take out the what would be the high of the head, then you're golden, and you could easily rally, you know, another $50-$60. But if you fail anywhere between here and there and then take out 1500, you have a head and shoulders that you could easily take it to below 1500, maybe even 1450. And I'm not bearish gold, because I think, as I've said for the last year and a half, when I started turning friendly after years of being bearish, you know, I think between the money supply and between the, you know, the CPI and PPI figures that I don't think are accurate at all, the adjustments of the basket to suit the consumer basket to suit their needs, I think inflation's much, much higher than what they lay before the public. The chart looks a little bit scary right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were listening, that the one group says it's plateauing here to get revved up for a run up, and it also looks to me like it's stalling here. So I don't know which is which.
You're not going to know chart wise unless it has a couple closes April contract above 1600 or a couple closes below 1550. It's really, and I'm not just picking those numbers; those were very key cyclical highs and lows.
Well, Well, I mean, if every country keeps pouring more stuff out there in terms of currency, I don't see it goes too much lower. But it doesn't mean it can't, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I want to be friendly, but I look at that, the picture, and that formation, and I say, maybe I better pull back the bullhorns.
Well, I still got my putties, so I'm, in case it runs, but copper, I got a 255. I can't bring myself to sell copper at 255, David, but I wouldn't be surprised if if we're sitting here still worried about this.
Who knows? Yeah. If it's months down the road and China's still not buying, then, you know, hey, you mentioned it early. Did you ever think natural gas would be below $1.80?
No. And yet.
So who knows? You know, if the demand isn't there, it really doesn't matter the price.
Why did we totally fall off of the natural gas concrete trucks and the natural gas vans and everything? It was all the rage 8 years ago, and we still see the Ozinga guys coming by, and I tried to get one of those guys on the air years ago to talk about those natural gas concrete trucks, and
There you still see buses with, you know, big logos, you know, natural gas bus and, you know, environment and this and that and the other. I don't know why that never really expanded, especially when the price is so cheap.
Well, gas has come down too, regular gas, so it's maybe part of it. But I don't see how, like, people's gas vans aren't gas. I mean, you would think, or every governmental van in Washington, they don't go more than 100 miles each any direction. Why can't they all be gas? Part of it,
I don't get it.
There's actually a gas. Hey, is that place still open? The place on Elston Avenue, just south of division that there was a natural gas station?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't. I'm not. I think it's just it's there, but I don't think it's open anymore. I mean, it's anyway. Yeah. All right, David. So between now and Thursday, we're gonna be up or down, bud.
By the way, I called the Tesla close, pretty close. Oh, when you asked me Monday what Friday's close would be, I was pretty close on that one.
Yeah, but now it's up $50 already today.
I'm gonna just guess we're gonna be a percent and a half lower by Friday.
All right. Well, we'll take that under advisement on Thursday morning. But S&P futures down on 375, NASDAQ futures down 750. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey guys, what's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.